forward before he was done speaking. Chapter 21. Named. I kept tight to Jeb's side, a little in front of him. I wanted to be as far as possible from the two men following us. Jamie walked somewhere in the middle, not sure of where he wanted to be. I wasn't able to concentrate much on the rest of Jeb's tour. My attention was not focused on the second set of gardens he led me through, one with corn growing waist-high in the blistering heat of the brilliant mirrors, or the wide but low-ceilinged cavern he called the Rec Room. That one was pitch black and deep underground, but he told me they brought in lights when they wanted to play. The word play didn't make sense to me, not here in this group of tense, angry survivors, but I didn't ask him to explain. There was more water here, a tiny, noxiously sulfurous spring that Jeb said they sometimes used as a second latrine because it was no good for drinking. My attention was divided between the men walking behind us and the boy at my side. Ian and the doctor did mind their manners surprisingly well. No one attacked me from behind, though I thought my eyes might get lodged in the back of my head from trying to see if they were about to. They just followed quietly, sometimes talking to each other in low voices. Their comments revolved around names I didn't know, and nicknames for places and things that might or might not have been inside these caves. I couldn't understand any of it. Jamie said nothing, but he looked at me a lot. When I wasn't trying to keep an eye on the others, I was often peeking at him, too. This left little time to admire the things Jeb showed me, but he didn't seem to notice my preoccupations. Some of the tunnels were very long. The distances hidden beneath the ground here were mind-boggling. Often they were pitch black, but Jeb and the others never so much as paused, clearly familiar with their whereabouts and long since accustomed to traveling in darkness. It was harder for me than it was when Jeb and I were alone. In the dark, every noise sounded like an attack. Even the doctor's and Ian's casual chatter seemed like a cover for some nefarious move. "Paranoid," Melanie commented. "If that's what it takes to keep us alive, so be it." "I wish you would pay more attention to Uncle Jeb. This is fascinating. Do what you want with your time." "I can only hear and see what you hear and see, Wanderer," she told me. Then she changed the subject. "Jamie looks okay, don't you think? Not too unhappy? He looks wary." We were just coming into some light after the longest trek so far in the humid blackness.
"This here is the southernmost spur of the tube system," Jeb explained as we walked. "Not super convenient, but it gets good light all day long. That's why we made it the hospital wing. This is where Doc does his thing."
The moment Jeb announced where we were, my body froze and my joints locked. I skidded to a halt, my feet planted against the rock floor. My eyes, wide with terror, flickered between Jeb's face and the face of the doctor. Had this all been a ruse, then? Wait for stubborn Jared to be out of the picture and then lure me back here? I couldn't believe I'd walk to this place under my own power. How stupid I was. Melanie was just as aghast. "We might as well have gift-wrapped ourselves for them." They stared back at me, Jeb expressionless, the doctor looking as surprised as I felt, though not as horrified. I would have flinched, ripped myself away from the touch of a hand on my arm, if the hand had not been so familiar. "No," Jamie said, his hand hesitantly resting just below my elbow. "No, it's okay, really. Right, Uncle Jeb?" Jamie looked trustingly at the old man. "It's okay, right?"
"Sure it is."
Jeb's faded blue eyes were calm and clear.
"Just showing you my place, kid, that's all." "What are you talking about?"
Ian grumbled from behind us, sounding annoyed that he didn't understand.
"Did you think we brought you here on purpose? For Doc?"
Jamie said to me instead of answering Ian.
"Because we wouldn't do that. We promised Jared."
I stared at his earnest face, trying to believe.
"Oh,"
Ian said as he understood, and then he laughed.
That wasn't a bad plan. I'm surprised I didn't think of it.
Jamie scowled at the big man and patted my arm before removing his hand.
Don't be scared, he said.
Jeb took up where he'd left off.
So this big room here is fitted up with a few cots in case anyone gets sick or hurt. We've been pretty lucky on that count. Doc doesn't have much to work with in an emergency.
Jeb grinned at me.
Your folks threw out all our medicines when they took over things. Hard to get our hands on what we need.
I nodded slightly. The movement was absent-minded. I was still reeling, trying to get my bearings. This room looked innocent enough, as if it were only used for healing, but it made my stomach twist and contract.
What do you know about alien medicine?
The doctor asked suddenly, his head cocked to the side. He watched my face with expectant curiosity. I stared at him wordlessly.
Oh, you can talk to Doc, Jeb encouraged me. He's a pretty decent guy, all things considered.
I shook my head once. I meant to answer the doctor's question, to tell them that I knew nothing, but they misunderstood.
She's not giving away any trade secrets, Ian said sourly. Are you, sweetheart? Manners, Ian,
Jeb barked.
Is it a secret?
Jamie asked, guarded but clearly curious. I shook my head again. They all stared at me in confusion. Doc shook his head too, slowly, baffled. I took a deep breath, then whispered, I'm not a healer. I don't know how the medications work, only that they do work. They heal, rather than merely treating symptoms. No trial and error. Of course the human medicines were discarded. All four of them stared with blank expressions. First they were surprised when I didn't answer, and now they were surprised when I did. Humans were impossible to please.
Your kind didn't change too much of what we left behind, Jeb said thoughtfully after a moment. Just the medical stuff, and the spaceships instead of planes. Other than that, life seems to go on just the same as ever, on the surface.
We come to experience, not to change, I whispered. Health takes priority over that philosophy, though. I shut my mouth with an audible snap. I had to be more careful. The humans hardly wanted a lecture on soul philosophy. Who knew what would anger them, or what would snap their fragile patience? Jeb nodded, still thoughtful, and then ushered us onward. He wasn't as enthusiastic as he continued my tour through the few connecting caves here in the medical wing, not as involved in the presentation. When we turned around and headed back into the black corridor, he lapsed into silence. It was a long, quiet walk. I thought through what I'd said, looking for something that might have offended. Jeb was too strange for me to guess if that was the case. The other humans, hostile and suspicious as they were, at least made sense. How could I hope to make sense of Jeb? The tour ended abruptly when we re-entered the huge garden cavern where the carrot sprouts made a bright green carpet across the dark floor.
Show's over, Jeb said gruffly, looking at Ian and the doctor. Go do something useful.
Ian rolled his eyes at the doctor, but they both turned good-naturedly enough and made their way toward the biggest exit, the one that led to the kitchen, I remembered. Jamie hesitated, looking after them, but not moving.
You come with me, Jeb told him, slightly less gruff this time. I've got a job for you.
Okay,
Jamie said. I could see that he was pleased to have been chosen. Jamie walked beside me again as we headed back toward the sleeping quarters section of the caves. I was surprised, as we chose the third passageway from the left, that Jamie seemed to know exactly where we were going. Jeb was slightly behind us, but Jamie stopped at once when we reached the green screen that covered the seventh apartment. He moved the screen aside for me, but stayed in the hall.
You okay to sit tight for a while? Jeb asked me.
I nodded, grateful at the thought of hiding again. I ducked through the opening and then stood a few feet in, not sure what to do with myself. Melanie remembered that there were books here, but I reminded her of my vow to not touch anything.
"I got things to do, kid," Jeb said to Jamie. "Food ain't gonna fix itself, you know. You up to guard duty?"
"Sure," Jamie said with a bright smile. His thin chest swelled with a deep breath. My eyes widened in disbelief as I watched Jeb place the rifle in Jamie's eager hands.
"Are you crazy?" I shouted.
My voice was so loud that I didn't recognize it at first. It felt like I'd been whispering forever. Jeb and Jamie looked up at me, shocked. I was out in the hallway with them in a second. I almost reached for the hard metal of the barrel, almost ripped it from the boy's hands. What stopped me wasn't the knowledge that a move like that would surely get me killed. What stopped me was the fact that I was weaker than the humans in this way. Even to save the boy, I could not make myself touch the weapon. I turned on Jeb instead.
"What are you thinking? Giving the weapon to a child? He could kill himself."
"Jamie's been through enough to be called a man, I think. He knows how to handle himself around a gun."
Jamie's shoulders straightened at Jeb's praise, and he gripped the gun tighter to his chest. I gaped at Jeb's stupidity.
"What if they come for me with him here? Did you think of what could happen? This isn't a joke. They'll hurt him to get to me."
Jeb remained calm, his face placid.
"Don't think there'll be any trouble today. I'd bet on it."
"Well, I wouldn't!"
I was yelling again. My voice echoed off the tunnel walls. Someone was sure to hear, but I didn't care. Better they come while Jeb was still here.
"If you're so sure, then leave me here alone. Let what happens happen. But don't put Jamie in danger."
"Is it the kid you're worried about, or are you just afraid that he'll turn the gun on you?"
Jeb asked, his voice almost languid. I blinked, my anger derailed. That thought had not even occurred to me. I glanced blankly at Jamie, met his surprised gaze, and saw that the idea was shocking to him, too. It took me a minute to recover my side of the argument, and by the time I did, Jeb's expression had changed. His eyes were intent, his mouth pursed, as if he were about to fit the last piece into a frustrating puzzle.
"Give the gun to Ian or any of the others. I don't care," I said, my voice slow and even. "Just leave the boy out of this."
Jeb's sudden face-wide grin reminded me, strangely, of a pouncing cat.
"It's my house, kid, and I'll do what I want. I always do."
Jeb turned his back and ambled away down the hall, whistling as he went. I watched him go, my mouth hanging open. When he disappeared, I turned to Jamie, who was watching me with a sullen expression.
"I'm not a child," he muttered in a deeper tone than usual, his chin jutting out belligerently. "Now you should go in your room."
The order was less than severe, but there was nothing else I could do. I'd lost this disagreement by a large margin. I sat down with my back against the rock that formed one side of the cave opening, the side where I could hide behind the half-open screen, but still watch Jamie. I wrapped my arms around my legs and began doing what I knew I would be doing as long as this insane situation continued. I worried. I also strained my eyes and ears for some sound of approach, to be ready. No matter what Jeb said, I would prevent anyone from challenging Jamie's guard. I would give myself up before they asked.
"Yes," Melanie agreed succinctly.
Jamie stood in the hallway for a few minutes, the gun tight in his hands, unsure as to how to do his job. He started pacing after that, back and forth in front of the screen, but he seemed to feel silly after a couple of passes. Then he sat down on the floor beside the open end of the screen. The gun eventually settled on his folded legs and his chin into his cupped hands. After a long time, he sighed. Guard duty was not as exciting as he'd been expecting. I did not get bored watching him. After maybe an hour or two, he started looking at me again, flickering glances. His lips opened a few times, and then he thought better of whatever he was going to say. I laid my chin on my knees and waited as he struggled. My patience was rewarded. "That planet you were coming from before you were in Melanie?" he finally said. "What was it like there? Was it like here?" The direction of his thoughts caught me off guard. "No," I said. With only Jamie here, it felt right to speak normally instead of whispering. "No, it was very different." "Will you tell me what it was like?" he asked, cocking his head to one side, the way he used to when he was really interested in one of Melanie's bedtime stories. So I told him. I told him all about the seaweeds, waterlogged planet. I told him about the two suns, the elliptical orbit, the gray waters, the unmoving permanence of roots, the stunning vistas of a thousand eyes, the endless conversations of a million soundless voices that all could hear. He listened with wide eyes and a fascinated smile. "Is that the only other place?" he asked when I fell silent, trying to think of anything I'd missed. "Are the sea weeds," he laughed once at the pun, "the only other aliens?" I laughed, too. "Hardly. No more than I'm the only alien on this world." "Tell me." So I told him about the bats on the singing world, how it was to live in musical blindness, how it was to fly. I told him about the mists planet, how it felt to have thick white fur and four hearts to keep warm, how to give claw beasts a wide berth. I started to tell him about the planet of the flowers, about the color and the light, but he interrupted me with a new question. "What about the little green guys with the triangle heads and the big black eyes? The ones who crashed in Roswell and all that? Was that you guys?"
"Nope. Not us."
"Was it all fake?"
"I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. It's a big universe, and there's a lot of company out there."
"How did you come here, then? If you weren't the little green guys, who were you? You had to have bodies to move and stuff, right?"
"Right," I agreed, surprised at his grasp of the facts at hand. I shouldn't have been surprised. I knew how bright he was, his mind like a thirsty sponge. "We used our spider selves in the very beginning to get things started."
"Spiders?"
I told him about the spiders, a fascinating species. Brilliant. The most incredible minds we'd ever come across, and each spider had three of them. Three brains, one in each section of their segmented bodies. We'd yet to find a problem they couldn't solve for us. And yet they were so coldly analytical that they rarely came up with a problem they were curious enough to solve for themselves. Of all our hosts, the spiders welcomed our occupation the most. They barely noticed the difference, and when they did, they seemed to appreciate the direction we provided. The few souls who had walked on the surface of the spider's planet before implantation told us that it was cold and gray. No wonder the spiders only saw in black and white and had a limited sense of temperature. The spiders lived short lives, but the young were born knowing everything their parent had, so no knowledge was lost. I'd lived out one of the short life terms of the species and then left with no desire to return. The amazing clarity of my thoughts, the easy answers that came to any question almost without effort, the march and dance of numbers were no substitute for emotion and color, which I could only vaguely understand when inside that body. I wondered how any soul could be content there, but the planet had been self-sufficient for thousands of Earth years. It was still open for settling only because the spiders reproduced so quickly, great sacks of eggs. I started to tell Jamie how the offensive had been launched here. The spiders were our best engineers. The ships they made for us danced nimbly and undetectably through the stars. The spiders' bodies were almost as useful as their minds. Four long legs to each segment, from which they'd earned their nickname on this planet, and 12-fingered hands on each leg.
These six-jointed fingers were as slender and strong as steel threads, capable of the most delicate procedures. About the mass of a cow, but short and lean, the spiders had no trouble with the first insertions. They were stronger than humans, smarter than humans, and prepared, which the humans were not. I stopped short, mid-sentence, when I saw the crystalline sparkle on Jamie's cheek. He was staring straight ahead at nothing, his lips pressed in a tight line. A large drop of salt water rolled slowly down the cheek closest to me. "Idiot," Melanie chastised me. "Didn't you think what your story would mean to him? Didn't you think of warning me sooner?" She didn't answer. No doubt she'd been as caught up in the storytelling as I was. "Jamie," I murmured. My voice was thick. The sight of his tear had done strange things to my throat. "Jamie, I'm so sorry. I wasn't thinking." Jamie wiped the tear away.
"It's okay," I asked. "I wanted to know how it happened."
His voice was gruff, trying to hide the pain. It was instinctive, the desire to lean forward and wipe that tear away. I tried at first to ignore it. I was not Melanie. But the tear hung there, motionless, as if it would never fall. Jamie's eyes stayed fixed on the blank wall, and his lips trembled. He wasn't far from me. I stretched my arm out to brush my fingers against his cheek. The tear spread thin across his skin and disappeared. Acting on instinct again, I left my hand against his warm cheek, cradling his face. For a short second, he pretended to ignore me. Then he rolled toward me, his eyes closed, his hands reaching. He curled into my side, his cheek against the hollow of my shoulder where it had once fit better, and sobbed. These were not the tears of a child, and that made them more profound, made it more sacred and painful that he would cry them in front of me. This was the grief of a man at the funeral for his entire family. My arms wound around him, not fitting as easily as they used to, and I cried too. "I'm sorry," I said again and again. I apologized for everything in those two words. That we'd ever found this place. That we'd chosen it. That I'd been the one to take his sister. That I'd brought her back here and hurt him again. That I'd made him cry today with my insensitive stories. I didn't drop my arms when his anguish quieted. I was in no hurry to let him go. It seemed as though my body had been starving for this from the beginning, but I'd never understood before now what would feed the hunger. The mysterious bond of mother and child, so strong on this planet, was not a mystery to me any longer. There was no bond greater than one that required your life for another's. I'd understood this truth before. What I had not understood was why. Now I knew why a mother would give her life for her child, and this knowledge would forever shape the way I saw the universe.
"I know I've taught you better than that, kid."
We jumped apart. Jamie lurched to his feet, but I curled closer to the ground, cringing into the wall. Jeb leaned down and picked up the gun we'd both forgotten from the floor.
"You've got to mind a gun better than this, Jamie."
His tone was very gentle. It softened the criticism. He reached out to tousle Jamie's shaggy hair. Jamie ducked under Jeb's hand, his face scarlet with mortification.
"Sorry,"
he muttered, and turned as if to flee. He stopped after just a step, though, and swiveled back to look at me.
"I don't know your name," he said.
"They called me Wanderer," I whispered.
"Wanderer?"
I nodded. He nodded too, then hurried away. The back of his neck was still red. When he was gone, Jeb leaned against the rock and slid down till he was seated where Jamie had been. Like Jamie, he kept the gun cradled in his lap.
"That's a real interesting name you've got there," he told me.
He seemed to be back to his chatty mood.
"Maybe sometime you'll tell me how you got it. Bet that's a good story. But it's kind of a mouthful, don't you think? Wanderer?"
I stared at him,
Mind if I call you Wanda, for short? It flows easier.
He waited this time for a response. Finally, I shrugged. It didn't matter to me whether he called me Kid or some strange human nickname. I believed it was meant kindly.
Okay, then, Wanda.
He smiled, pleased at his invention.
It's nice to have a handle on you. Makes me feel like we're old friends.
He grinned that huge, cheek-stretching grin, and I couldn't help grinning back, though my smile was more rueful than delighted. He was supposed to be my enemy. He was probably insane. And he was my friend. Not that he wouldn't kill me if things turned out that way, but he wouldn't like doing it. With humans, what more could you ask of a friend? Chapter 22 Cracked. Jeb put his hands behind his head and looked up at the dark ceiling, his face thoughtful. His chatty mood had not passed.
I've wondered a lot what it's like. Getting caught, you know. Saw it happen more than once. Come close a few times myself. What would it be like, I wondered. Would it hurt, having something put in your head? I've seen it done, you know.
My eyes widened in surprise, but he wasn't looking at me.
Seems like you all use some kind of anesthetic, but that's just a guess. Nobody was screaming in agony or anything, though, so it couldn't be too torturous.
I wrinkled my nose. Torture. No, that was the human's specialty.
Those stories you were telling the kid were real interesting.
I stiffened, and he laughed lightly.
Yeah, I was listening. Eavesdropping, I'll admit it. I'm not sorry. It was great stuff. And you won't talk to me the way you do with Jamie. I really got a kick out of those bats and the plants and spiders. Gives a man lots to think about. Always like to read crazy out there stuff. Science fiction and whatnot. Ate that stuff up. And the kid's like me. He's read all the books I've got 2-3 times apiece. Must be a treat for him to get some new stories. Sure is for me. You're a good storyteller.
I kept my eyes down, but I felt myself softening, losing my guard a bit. Like anyone inside these emotional bodies, I was a sucker for flattery.
Everyone here thinks you hunted us out to turn us over to the Seekers.
The word sent a shock jolting through me. My jaw stiffened and my teeth cut my tongue. I tasted blood.
What other reason could there be?
He went on, oblivious to my reaction or ignoring it.
But they're just trapped in fixed notions, I think. I'm the only one with questions. I mean, what kind of a plan was that to wander off into the desert without any way to get back?
He chuckled.
Wandering. Guess that's your specialty. Eh, Wanda?
He leaned toward me and nudged me with one elbow. Wide with uncertainty, my eyes flickered to the floor, to his face, and back to the floor. He laughed again.
That trek was just a few steps shy of a successful suicide, in my opinion. Definitely not a Seeker's M.O., if you know what I mean. I've tried to reason it out. Use logic, right? So, if you didn't have backup, which I've seen no sign of, and you had no way to get back, then you must have had a different goal. You haven't been real talkative since you got here, except with the kid just now, but I've listened to what you have said. Kinda seems to me like the reason you almost died out there was 'cause you were hell-bent on finding that kid and Jared.
I closed my eyes.
Only why would you care?
Jeb asked, expecting no answer, just musing.
So this is how I see it. Either you're a really good actress, like a super-seeker, some new breed, sneakier than the first, with some kind of a plan I can't figure out. Or you're not acting. The first seems like a pretty complicated explanation for your behavior then and now, and I don't buy it. But if you're not acting...
He paused for a moment.
Spent a lot of time watching your kind. I was always waiting for them to change, you know, when they didn't have to act like us anymore because there was no one to act for. I kept on watching and waiting, but they just kept on acting like humans. Staying with their bodies' families, going out for picnics in good weather, planting flowers and painting pictures and all the rest of it. I've been wondering if you all aren't turning sort of human. If we don't have some real influence in the end.
He waited, giving me a chance to respond. I didn't.
Saw something a few years ago that stuck with me. Old man and woman. Well, the bodies of an old man and an old woman. Been together so long that the skin on their fingers grew in ridges around their wedding rings. They were holding hands, and he kissed her on the cheek, and she blushed under all those wrinkles. Occurred to me that you have all the same feelings we have, because you're really us, not just hands in a puppet.
Yes, I whispered. We have all the same feelings. Human feelings. Hope and pain and love.
So if you aren't acting, well then I'd swear to it that you loved them both. You do. Wanda, not just Mel's body.
I put my head down on my arms. The gesture was tantamount to an admission, but I didn't care. I couldn't hold it up anymore.
So that's you. But I wonder about my niece, too. What was it like for her? What would it be like for me? When they put somebody inside your head, are you just gone, erased, like being dead? Or is it like being asleep? Are you aware of the outside control? Is it aware of you? Are you trapped in there, screaming inside?
I sat very still, trying to keep my face smooth.
Plainly, your memories and behaviors, all that is left behind. But your consciousness. Seems like most people wouldn't go down without a fight. Hell, I know I would try to stay. Never been one to take no for an answer, anyone will tell you that. I'm a fighter. All of us who are left are fighters. And you know, I would have pegged Mel for a fighter, too.
He didn't move his eyes from the ceiling, but I looked at the floor, stared at it, memorizing the patterns in the purple-gray dust.
Yeah, I've wondered about that a lot.
I could feel his eyes on me now, though my head was still down. I didn't move except to breathe slowly in and out. It took a great deal of effort to keep that slow rhythm smooth. I had to swallow. The blood was still flowing in my mouth.
Why did we ever think he was crazy? Mel wondered. He sees everything. He's a genius.
He's both.
Well, maybe this means we don't have to keep quiet anymore. He knows.
She was hopeful. She'd been very quiet lately, absent almost half the time. It wasn't as easy for her to concentrate when she was relatively happy. She'd won her big fight. She'd gotten us here. Her secrets were no longer in jeopardy. Jared and Jamie could never be betrayed by her memories. With the fight taken out of her, it was harder for her to find the will to speak, even to me. I could see how the idea of discovery, of having the other humans recognize her existence, invigorated her.
Jeb knows, yes. Does that really change anything?
She thought about the way the other humans looked at Jeb.
Right,
she sighed.
But I think Jamie, well, he doesn't know or guess, but I think he feels the truth.
You might be right. I guess we'll see if that does him or us any good in the end.
Jeb could only manage to keep quiet for a few seconds, and then he was off again, interrupting us. Pretty interesting stuff. Not as much bang-bang as the movies I used to like, but still pretty interesting. I'd like to hear more about those spider thingies. I'm real curious. Real curious for sure.
I took a deep breath and raised my head.
What do you want to know?
He smiled at me warmly, his eyes crinkling into half moons.
Three brains, right?
I nodded.
How many eyes?
12. One at each juncture of the leg and the body. We didn't have lids, just a lot of fibers, like steel wool eyelashes to protect them. He nodded, his eyes bright.
Were they furry, like tarantulas?
No, sort of armored, scaled, like a reptile or a fish. I slouched against the wall, settling myself in for a long conversation. Jeb didn't disappoint on that count. I lost track of how many questions he asked me. He wanted details, the spiders' looks, their behaviors, and how they'd handled Earth. He didn't flinch away from the invasion details. On the contrary, he almost seemed to enjoy that part more than the rest. His questions came fast on the heels of my answers, and his grins were frequent. When he was satisfied about the spiders, hours later, he wanted to know more about the flowers.
"You didn't half explain that one," he reminded me.
So I told him about that most beautiful and placid of planets. Almost every time I stopped to breathe, he interrupted me with a new question. He liked to guess the answers before I could speak, and didn't seem to mind getting them wrong in the least.
"So did you eat flies, like a Venus flytrap? I'll bet you did. Or maybe something bigger, like a bird, like a pterodactyl."
"No, we used sunlight for food, like most plants here."
"Well, that's not as much fun as my idea."
Sometimes I found myself laughing with him. We were just moving on to the dragons when Jamie showed up with dinner for three.
"Hi, Wanderer," he said, a little embarrassed.
"Hi, Jamie," I answered, a little shy, not sure if he would regret the closeness we'd shared. I was, after all, the bad guy. But he sat down right next to me between me and Jeb, crossing his legs and setting the food tray in the middle of our little conclave. I was starving and parched from all the talking. I took a bowl of soup and downed it in a few gulps.
"Should have known you were just being polite in the mess hall today. Gotta speak up when you're hungry, Wanda. I'm no mind reader."
I didn't agree with that last part, but I was too busy chewing a mouthful of bread to answer.
"Wanda?"
Jamie asked. I nodded, letting him know that I didn't mind.
"Kinda suits her, don't you think?"
Jeb was so proud of himself, I was surprised he didn't pat himself on the back just for effect.
"Kinda, I guess," Jamie said. "Were you guys talking about dragons?"
"Yeah," Jeb told him enthusiastically. "But not the lizardy kind. They're all made up of jelly. They can fly, though, sort of. The air's thicker, sort of jelly, too, so it's almost like swimming, and they can breathe acid. That's about as good as fire, wouldn't you say?"
I let Jeb fill Jamie in on the details while I ate more than my share of food and drained a water bottle. When my mouth was free, Jeb started in with the questions again.
"Now this acid..."
Jamie didn't ask questions the way Jeb did, and I was more careful about what I said, with him there. However, this time Jeb never asked anything that might lead to a touchy subject, whether by coincidence or design, so my caution wasn't necessary. The light slowly faded until the hallway was black. Then it was silver, a tiny dim reflection from the moon that was just enough, as my eyes adjusted, to see the man and the boy beside me. Jamie edged closer to me as the night wore on. I didn't realize that I was combing my fingers through his hair as I talked until I noticed Jeb staring at my hand. I folded my arms across my body. Finally, Jeb yawned a huge yawn that had me and Jamie doing the same.
"You tell a good story, Wanda," Jeb said when we were all done stretching.
"It's what I did before. I was a teacher at the university in San Diego. I taught history."
"A teacher?"
Jeb repeated, excited.
"Well, ain't that amazing? There's something we could use around here. Mag's girl Sharon does the teaching for the three kids, but there's a lot she can't help with. She's most comfortable with math and the like. History now."
"I only taught our history," I interrupted. Waiting for him to take a breath wasn't going to work, it seemed. "I wouldn't be much help as a teacher here. I don't have any training."
"Your history is better than nothing. Things we human folks ought to know, seeing as we live in a more populated universe than we were aware of."
"But I wasn't a real teacher," I told him, desperate. Did he honestly think anyone wanted to hear my voice, let alone listen to my stories? I was sort of an honorary professor, almost a guest lecturer. They only wanted me because... well, because of the story that goes along with my name.
That's the next one I was going to ask for, Jeb said complacently. We can talk about your teaching experience later. Now, why did they call you Wanderer? I've heard a bunch of odd ones. Dry water, fingers in the sky, falling upward, all mixed in, of course, with the Pams and the Bobs. I tell you, it's the kind of thing that can drive a man crazy with curiosity.
I waited till I was sure he was done to begin. Well, the way it usually works is that a soul will try out a planet or two, two's the average, and then they'll settle in their favorite place. They just move to new hosts in the same species on the same planet when their body gets close to death. It's very disorienting moving from one kind of body to the next. Most souls really hate that. Some never move from the planet they are born on. Occasionally someone has a hard time finding a good fit. They may try three planets. I met a soul once who'd been to five before he'd settled with the bats. I liked it there. I suppose that's the closest I've ever come to choosing a planet, if it hadn't been for the blindness.
How many planets have you lived on? Jamie asked in a hushed voice.
Somehow, while I'd been talking, his hand had found its way into mine. This is my ninth, I told him, squeezing his fingers gently.
Wow! Nine, he breathed.
That's why they wanted me to teach. Anybody can tell them our statistics, but I have personal experience from most of the planets we've taken. I hesitated at that word, but it didn't seem to bother Jamie. There are only three I've never been to. Well, now four. They just opened a new world.
I expected Jeb to jump in with questions about the new world, or the ones I'd skipped, but he just played absently with the ends of his beard.
Why did you never stay anywhere? Jamie asked.
I never found a place I liked enough to stay.
What about Earth? Do you think you'll stay here?
I wanted to smile at his child's confidence, as if I were going to get the chance to ever move on to another host, as if I were going to get the chance to live out even another month in the one I had.
Earth is very interesting, I murmured. It's harder than any place I've been before.
Harder than the place with the frozen air and the claw beasts? He asked.
In its own way, yes. How could I explain that the Mist's planet only came at you from the outside? It was much more difficult to be attacked from within.
Attacked? Melanie scoffed.
I yawned. I wasn't actually thinking of you, I told her. I was thinking of these unstable emotions always betraying me. But you did attack me, pushing your memories on me that way.
I learned my lesson, she assured me dryly. I could feel how intensely aware she was of the hand in mine. There was an emotion slowly building in her that I didn't recognize. Something on the edge of anger with a hint of desire and a portion of despair.
Jealousy, she enlightened me.
Jeb yawned again.
I'm being downright rude, I guess. You must be bushed. Walking all over today and then me keeping you up half the night talking ought to be a better host. Come on, Jamie. Let's go and let Wanda get some sleep.
I was exhausted. It felt as if it had been a very long day, and from Jeb's words, perhaps that wasn't in my imagination.
Okay, Uncle Jeb.
Jamie jumped lightly to his feet and then offered his hand to the old man.
Thanks, kid.
Jeb groaned as he got up.
And thanks to you, too, he added in my direction. Most interesting conversation I've had in, well, probably forever. Rest your voice up, Wanda, because my curiosity is a powerful thing. Ah, there he is. About time.
Only then did I hear the sound of approaching footsteps. Automatically, I shrank against the wall and scooted farther back into the cave room, and then felt more exposed because the moonlight was brighter inside. I was surprised that this was the first person to turn in for the night. The corridor appeared to house many.
"Sorry, Jeb. I got to talking with Sharon, and then I sort of dozed off."
It was impossible not to recognize this easy, gentle voice. My stomach rolled, unstable, and I wished it were empty.
"We didn't even notice, Doc," Jeb said. "We were having the time of our lives here. Someday you'll have to get her to tell you some of her stories. Great stuff. Not tonight, though. She's got to be pretty worn out, I'd bet. We'll see you in the morning."
The doctor was spreading a mat out in front of the cave entrance, just as Jared had.
"Keep an eye on this," Jeb said, laying the gun beside the mat.
"Are you okay, Wanda?" Jamie asked. "You're shaking."
I hadn't realized it, but my whole body was quivering. I didn't answer him. My throat felt swollen shut.
"Now, now," Jeb said in a soothing voice. "I asked Doc if he minded taking a shift. You don't need to worry about anything. Doc's an honorable man."
The doctor smiled a sleepy smile. "I'm not going to hurt you. Wanda, is it? I promise. I'll just keep watch while you sleep." I bit my lip, and the quivering didn't stop. Jeb seemed to think everything was settled, though.
"Night, Wanda. Night, Doc," he said as he started back down the hall.
Jamie hesitated, looking at me with a worried expression.
"Doc's okay," he promised in a whisper.
"Come on, boy. It's late."
Jamie hurried off after Jeb. I watched the doctor when they were gone, waiting for some change. Doc's relaxed expression didn't waver, though, and he didn't touch the gun. He stretched his long frame out on the mat, his calves and feet hanging off the end. Lying down, he looked much smaller. He was so rail thin.
"Good night," he murmured drowsily.
Of course I didn't answer. I watched him in the dull moonlight, timing the rise and fall of his chest by the sound of the pulse thudding in my ears. His breathing slowed and got deeper, and then he began to quietly snore. It could have been an act, but even if it was, there wasn't much I could do about it. Silently, I crept deeper into the room till I felt the edge of the mattress against my back. I'd promised myself that I would not disturb this place, but it probably wouldn't hurt anything if I just curled up on the foot of the bed. The floor was rough and so hard. The sound of the doctor's soft snoring was comforting. Even if it was put on to calm me, at least I knew exactly where he was in the darkness. Live or die, I figured I might as well go ahead and sleep. I was dog-tired, as Melanie would say. I let my eyes close. The mattress was softer than anything I'd touched since coming here. I relaxed, sinking in. There was a low, shuffling sound. It was inside the room with me. My eyes popped open, and I could see a shadow between the moonlit ceiling and me. Outside, the doctor's snores continued uninterrupted. Chapter 23. Confessed. The shadow was huge and misshapen. It loomed over me, top-heavy, swinging closer to my face. I think I meant to scream, but the sound got trapped in my throat, and all that came out was a breathless squeak.
"Shh, it's just me," Jamie whispered.
Something bulky and roundish rolled from his shoulders and plopped softly to the floor. When it was gone, I could see his true, lithe shadow against the moonlight. I caught a few gasps of air, my hand clutching at my throat.
"Sorry," he whispered, sitting down on the edge of the mattress. "I guess that was pretty stupid. I was trying not to wake Doc. I didn't even think how I would scare you. You okay?"
He patted my ankle, which was the part of me closest to him.
"Sure,"
I huffed, still breathless.
"Sorry," he muttered again.
"What are you doing here, Jamie? Shouldn't you be asleep?"
"That's why I'm here. Uncle Jeb was snoring like you wouldn't believe. I couldn't stand it anymore."
His answer didn't make sense to me.
"Don't you usually sleep with Jeb?"
Jamie yawned and bent to untie the bulky bedroll he'd dropped to the floor. No, I usually sleep with Jared. He doesn't snore, but you know that.
I did. Why don't you sleep in Jared's room, then? Are you afraid to sleep alone?
I wouldn't have blamed him for that. It seemed like I was constantly terrified here.
Afraid? He grumbled, offended.
No. This is Jared's room. And mine.
What?
I gasped.
Jeb put me in Jared's room?
I couldn't believe it.
Jared would kill me.
No, he would kill Jeb first, and then he would kill me.
It's my room, too. I told Jeb you could have it.
Jared will be furious, I whispered.
I can do what I want with my room, Jamie muttered rebelliously, but then he bit his lip.
We won't tell him. He doesn't have to know.
I nodded. Good idea.
You don't mind if I sleep in here, do you? Uncle Jeb's really loud.
No, I don't mind. But Jamie, I don't think you should.
He frowned, trying to be tough instead of hurt.
Why not?
Because it's not safe. Sometimes people come looking for me at night.
His eyes went wide. They do?
Jared always had the gun. They went away.
Who?
I don't know. Kyle sometimes. But there are surely others who are still here.
He nodded.
All the more reason why I should stay. Doc might need help.
Jamie,
I'm not a kid, Wanda. I can take care of myself.
Obviously, arguing was only going to make him more stubborn.
At least take the bed, I said, surrendering. I'll sleep on the floor. It's your room.
That's not right. You're the guest,
I snorted quietly.
Ha! No, the bed is yours.
No way!
He lay down on the mat, folding his arms tightly across his chest. Again, I saw that arguing was the wrong approach to take with Jamie.
Well, this one I could rectify as soon as he was asleep.
Jamie slept so deeply it was almost a coma. Melanie could carry him anywhere once he was out.
You can use my pillow,
he told me, patting the one next to the side where he lay.
You don't need to scrunch up at the bottom there.
I sighed, but crawled to the top of the bed.
That's right, he said approvingly.
Now could you throw me Jared's? I hesitated, about to reach for the pillow under my head. He jumped up, leaned over me, and snatched the other pillow. I sighed again. We lay in silence for a while, listening to the low whistle of the doctor's breathing.
Doc has a nice snore, doesn't he?
Jamie whispered.
It won't keep you up, I agreed.
You tired?
Yeah. Oh.
I waited for him to say something more, but he was quiet.
Was there something you wanted? I asked.
He didn't answer right away, but I could feel him struggling, so I waited.
If I asked you something, would you tell me the truth?
It was my turn to hesitate.
I don't know everything, I hedged.
You would know this. When we were walking, me and Jeb, he was telling me some things. Things he thought, but I don't know if he's right.
Melanie was suddenly very there in my head.
Jamie's whisper was hard to hear,
quieter than my breathing.
Uncle Jeb thinks that Melanie might still be alive. Inside there with you, I mean. My Jamie,
Melanie sighed. I said nothing to either of them.
I didn't know that could happen. Does that happen?
His voice broke, and I could hear that he was fighting tears. He was not a boy to cry, and here I'd grieved him this deeply twice in one day. A pain pierced through the general region of my chest.
Does it, Wanda?
Tell him. Please tell him that I love him.
Why won't you answer me?
Jamie was really crying now, but trying to muffle the sound. I crawled off the bed, squeezing into the hard space between the mattress and the mat, and threw my arm over his shaking chest. I leaned my head against his hair and felt his tears warm on my neck.
Is Melanie still alive, Wanda?
Please.
He was probably a tool. The old man could have sent him just for this. Jeb was smart enough to see how easily Jamie broke through my defenses. It was possible that Jeb was seeking confirmation for his theory, and he wasn't against using the boy to get it. What would Jeb do when he was certain of the dangerous truth? How would he use the information? I didn't think he meant me harm, but could I trust my own judgment? Humans were deceitful, treacherous creatures. I couldn't anticipate their darker agendas when such things were unthinkable to my species. Jamie's body shook beside me. "He's suffering!" Melanie cried. She battered ineffectually at my control. But I couldn't blame this on Melanie if it turned out to be a huge mistake. I knew who was speaking now.
"She promised she would come back, didn't she?"
I murmured. "Would Melanie break a promise to you?" Jamie slid his arms around my waist and clung to me for a long time. After a few minutes, he whispered, "Love you, Mal."
"She loves you, too. She's so happy that you're here and safe."
He was silent long enough for the tears on my skin to dry, leaving a fine, salty dust behind.
"Is everybody like that?"
Jamie whispered long after I thought he'd fallen asleep.
"Does everybody stay?"
"No," I told him sadly.
"No. Melanie is special. She's strong and brave. Very."
"Do you think..."
He paused to sniff.
"Do you think that maybe Dad is still there, too?"
I swallowed, trying to move the lump farther down my throat. It didn't work.
"No, Jamie. No, I don't think so. Not like Melanie is."
"Why?"
"Because he brought the Seekers looking for you. Well, the soul inside him did. Your father wouldn't have let that happen if he were still there. Your sister never let me see where the cabin was. She didn't even let me know that you existed for the longest time. She didn't bring me here until she was sure that I wouldn't hurt you."
It was too much information. Only as I finished speaking did I realize that the doctor wasn't snoring anymore. I could hear no noise from his breathing. "Stupid," I cursed myself internally.
"Wow,"
Jamie said. I whispered into his ear, so close that there was no way the doctor could possibly overhear.
"Yes, she's very strong."
Jamie strained to hear me, frowning, and then glanced at the opening to the dark hall. He must have realized the same thing I had, because he turned his face to my ear and whispered back softer than before,
"Why would you do that? Not hurt us. Isn't that what you want?"
"No, I don't want to hurt you."
"Why?"
"Your sister and I have spent a lot of time together. She shared you with me, and I started to love you too."
"And Jared too?"
I gritted my teeth for a second, chagrined that he had made the connection so easily.
"Of course I don't want anything to hurt Jared either."
"He hates you,"
Jamie told me, plainly grieved by the fact.
"Yes, everyone does," I sighed. "I can't blame them."
"Jeb doesn't, and I don't."
"You might, after you think about it more.
But you weren't even here when they took over. You didn't pick my dad or my mom or Melanie. You were in outer space then, right?"
"Yes. But I am what I am, Jamie. I did what souls do. I've had many hosts before Melanie, and nothing stopped me from taking lives again and again. It's how I live."
"Does Melanie hate you?"
I thought for a minute.
"Not as much as she used to."
"No. I don't hate you at all. Not anymore."
"She says she doesn't hate me at all anymore,"
I murmured, almost silently.
"How?"
How is she?
She's happy to be here. She's so happy to see you. She doesn't even care that they're going to kill us.
Jamie stiffened under my arm.
They can't. Not if Mel's still alive.
You've upset him, Melanie complained. You didn't have to say that. It won't be any easier for him if he's unprepared.
They won't believe that, Jamie, I whispered. They'll think I'm lying to trick you. They'll just want to kill me more if you tell them that. Only seekers lie.
The word made him shudder.
But you're not lying.
I know it, he said after a moment. I shrugged.
I won't let them kill her.
His voice, though quiet as a breath, was fierce with determination. I was paralyzed at the thought of him becoming more involved with this situation, with me. I thought of the barbarians he lived with. Would his age protect him from them if he tried to protect me? I doubted it. My thoughts scrambled, searching for some way to dissuade him without triggering his stubbornness. Jamie spoke before I could say anything. He was suddenly calm, as if the answer was plain in front of him.
Jared will think of something.
He always does.
Jared won't believe you either. He'll be the angriest of them all.
Even if he doesn't believe it, he'll protect her. Just in case.
We'll see,
I muttered. I'd find the perfect words later. The argument that would not sound like an argument.
Jamie was quiet, thinking.
Eventually his breathing got slower and his mouth fell open. I waited until I was sure he was deeply under, and then I crawled over him and very carefully shifted him from the floor to the bed. He was heavier than before, but I managed. He didn't wake. I put Jared's pillow back where it belonged and then stretched out on the mat. Well, I thought, I just hurled myself out of the frying pan. But I was too tired to care what this would mean tomorrow. Within seconds, I was unconscious. When I woke, the crevices in the ceiling were bright with echoed sunlight, and someone was whistling. The whistling stopped.
Finally, Jeb muttered when my eyes fluttered.
I rolled onto my side so that I could look at him. As I moved, Jamie's hand slid from my arm. Sometime in the night he must have reached out to me. Well, not to me. To his sister. Jeb was leaning against the natural rock doorframe, his arms folded across his chest.
Morning, he said. Get enough sleep?
I stretched, decided that I felt acceptably rested, and then nodded.
Oh, don't give me the silent treatment again, he complained, scowling.
Sorry, I murmured. I slept well, thank you.
Jamie stirred at the sound of my voice.
Wanda?
He asked. I was ridiculously touched that it was my silly nickname that he spoke on the edge of sleep.
Yes?
Jamie blinked and pulled his tangled hair out of his eyes.
Oh, hey, Uncle Jeb. My room not good enough for you, kid?
You snore real loud, Jamie said, and then yawned.
Haven't I taught you anything? Jeb asked him. Since when do you let a guest and a lady sleep on the floor?
Jamie sat up suddenly, staring around, disoriented. He frowned.
Don't upset him, I told Jeb. He insisted on taking the mat. I moved him when he was asleep.
Jamie snorted.
Mel always used to do that, too.
I widened my eyes slightly at him, trying to convey a warning. Jeb chuckled. I looked up at him, and he had that same pouncing cat expression he'd had yesterday. The solved puzzle expression. He walked over and kicked the edge of the mattress.
You've already missed your morning class. Sharon's bound to be testy about that, so get a move on.
Sharon is always testy, Jamie complained, but he got to his feet quickly.
On your way, boy.
Jamie looked at me again. Then he turned and disappeared into the hall.
Now,
Jeb said as soon as we were alone.
I think all this babysitting nonsense has gone on long enough. I'm a busy man. Everyone is busy here. Too busy to sit around playing guard. So today you're going to have to come along with me while I get my chores done.
I felt my mouth pop open. He stared at me, no smile.
Don't look so terrified, he grumbled. You'll be fine.
He patted his gun.
My house is no place for babies.
I couldn't argue with that. I took 3 quick, deep breaths, trying to steady my nerves. Blood pulsed so loudly in my ears that his voice seemed quiet in comparison when he spoke again.
Come on, Wanda. Day's wasting.
He turned and stomped out of the room. I was frozen.